This is Pambazuka News reporting from the 7th Annual World Social Forum held in Nairobi, Kenya. This is Rob Talpaley with Pambazuka News. I have the pleasure of having spoken to Figile Vilagezi and Vanessa Chitty, two South African lesbian women who have been involved in the LGBT movement for quite a long time. They are partners in the romantic sense as well as partners in advocacy and policy work.
I'm Figile Vilagezi. I'm the director of the Coalition of African Lesbians. We work in 12 different African countries. We're fighting for the equality of women who identify as lesbian, bisexual, and transgender.
I'm Vanessa Chetty. We support the work of CAR in South Africa. We basically are assisting them in terms of resources, in terms of material, physical, manpower, and things like that in South Africa.
Okay, well, it seems to me that lesbian, gay, transgender, and bisexual issues in Africa are incredibly taboo. Nobody wants to discuss them. And then it's unfortunate for people who belong to these communities. They don't have a safe space in which to engage with civil society members who may not be a part of the community themselves. What are you doing in South Africa, and what is the work of your organization that enables people to feel like they have a safe space in order to discuss these issues?
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, our organization is not necessarily a South African one, it's a Pan-African one. In South Africa specifically, what we've done is work with an organization called the Forum for the Empowerment of Women, which is fighting directly hate crimes against black lesbian women in South Africa, where you find women being raped because we call it curative rape, where people are hoping that if they are raped by men, they would be cured. They would be able to, you know, be normal again. And then you find also in Uganda a situation where we have some of our human rights defenders who are lesbian, bisexual, and transgender being invaded. We have a case of one of our human rights defenders who had her house raided by police, by the state, and we are dealing with that case. We've taken it up beyond Uganda to deal with it within the African Commission. So those are some of the challenges that you find. You know, some of the people are chucked out of their homes. You know, so what we do, we provide a lot of drop-in center kind of space where people can feel safe and be able to meet together and talk together, feel a sense of belonging. You know, they can be around people who understand who they are and how they express their sexuality. It's pretty much the work that we do, but we also do advocacy work directly, where we don't just do programs for the targeted women, but we challenge the states, the governments in the countries that we work in. We work with the African Commission currently. We have a program that is directed at Banjul. We go to Gambia every twice a year to make sure that we bring like shadow reports when states are bringing their presentations to say this is what they've achieved on democracy, good governance, and so on. We bring our shadow reports and say, you haven't done much. There are still violations on against sexual minorities. We have presented from Uganda last year, November, which went very, very well. We're planning to bring in more shadow reports into the process so that we can change our legislations in Africa. I mean, we are affected by the penal codes. You know, they're happening everywhere, Botswana, Uganda, Malawi, Mozambique, everywhere except South Africa. So that is a big challenge. But that's basically the kind of work we do. Over and above that, we do capacity building work, because some of our women, given their sexual orientation, they are not able to access the world of work. They're not able to access education, because they're either chucked out of schools or chucked out of work unless they conform. So what we are trying to do is to build a relationship with human rights movement within local countries, where we can be able to create programs where they can be able to access the world of work without being prejudiced against. But also the other kind of building of capacity is around them being able to challenge their own governments, you know, and be able to be self-reliant and do that work for themselves, to be able to take issues up on their own and not be afraid and claim their rights and claim their space.
Okay, and you're currently at the World Social Forum in Nairobi, Kenya. Obviously, the most safe space you can possibly create for discussing these issues of sexual minority rights. What is it that you've been discussing with your colleagues here at the World Social Forum that will enable you to go back to South Africa and do further advocacy and campaign work?
We're tackling the same issues, the issues of what we're dealing with particularly today is the whole issue of safety, because it cuts across all the work that we do. What is it that we can do to make sure that in the context of criminalization of homosexuality in Africa, we still maintain safety for people who identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender? So that's the issue we're tackling, and we're trying to build networks and alliances with organizations and other social movements who share our plight, who want to do our work, who want to support our work, because they are there. As much as Africa is a hostile environment for homosexuality, it's not everybody that is homophobic. That is our stance. So we're looking for people that are saying, hey, we are here, we support human rights, we are against human rights violations, and we want to support your work, because it's not everybody that is against us. There are few people who have stood by our side, and we're hoping that with the World Social Forum, we'll be able to build more alliances of that kind. We'll be able to assist us, hopefully, in different local countries.
Now, Chiti, you and I discussed this earlier, but it might be interesting for our listeners to hear the discussion again on the recording. I mentioned to you that I think South Africa has one of the most progressive laws as it relates to sexual minorities. Do you think that that's rhetoric, it's propaganda, it's just on the books? Is it being enforced currently? What is the political will of the government and sort of the social atmosphere of people on the ground? Are they open to these laws? Are they supportive of the laws? And if not, why?
In South Africa, currently, we have very progressive laws. The world considers to be one of the leading democracies in Africa. But socially, I think on the ground, we have a lot of homophobia, we have a lot of hate speech. And what happens, like, for example, if there's an incident of homophobic attack against a lesbian woman, like a hate crime that takes place against a lesbian woman or any person of a different sexual orientation in South Africa, it takes so long for the courts to actually process that, yet there are laws and things that are in place that could cover such a person. And then also that leads us to the fact of why did such an act take place in the first place? And then you realize that societal attitudes in terms of homophobia, in terms of hate, in terms of discrimination has not changed. So yes, we have progressive laws, but we don't have social reform. And I think, yes, it's the same thing that one could argue in terms of saying that we could bring in people and educate people. But if people are not willing to listen and use other forms of material to justify their crimes, for example, the Bible in South Africa is used a lot to justify why homosexuality should not exist in South Africa. For those particular reasons, we find ourselves, someone would use the Bible and justify it, whereas the governing law of the land is the constitution in South Africa. You see, so we have that contradiction, and it leads people to hate and discriminate, and eventually people are killed, murdered, thrown out of homes, and even to the point of where people are living on the streets because they have nowhere to go. And I mean, if we have a progressive democracy, should democracy not protect people's rights?
Yeah, those are all very important questions, I think. In such a racially diverse society as South Africa, do you find that there are certain communities, whether it's colored, black, African, Indian, so forth and so on, that support sexual minority rights more than others? Or is it pretty much the same sort of attitude across the racial divide?
It's different. You would find that within the white population, easily acceptable, in the colored community, is not that much of a taboo. Not that there isn't homophobia, but it's less than the Indian and the black communities.
And why is that, do you think?
Tradition and culture is one of the barriers to understanding homosexuality and accepting homosexuality as a human right. People claim, for example, that it's not part of our customs to be homosexual. It's something that we have imported from the West. We're learning from the West, basically, and there are no homosexuals in Africa. So that's one of the biggest challenges in the African context. I'm sure Chetty can pick up the Indian community, but from the black community, certainly people say you cannot be black and be homosexual. It is impossible. You are an embarrassment. You are an indictment to our society. It's just something that comes from the West, and it's demonic. You can be cleansed. You need ancestral You know, you need to get an ancestral ceremony, basically, to take the spirit out if you believe in your ancestors. If you're a religious person, then you have to have the church pray for you. We've had instances where people were undressed in the church, prayed for, rebuking the spirit, especially for transgender women. We have a case that happened in Uganda again where a transgender woman was dressed out, was stripped off in the church, and the church was praying for her, hoping that, because they said they could see a demon, a spirit of a man in her, and this man is wearing a check shirt and whatever, so they had to remove the shirt from her, remove all the clothes and pray for her, and it's men that are praying for her. It's very uncomfortable, touching her private parts in the name of Jesus and so on. It has happened in South Africa. I'm a practical example of that. I was a believer in Jesus Christ, and I had the church pray for me many times with the hope that I will be delivered. And there's this assumption also that if you get married, you know, you will be cured because you'll have sex more with a man, you'll get used to it, and possibly if you get a good man, you know, things will go fine. And I was married to a man, but it didn't change me, you know, because I thought maybe if I do it, things will change. But it still did not happen. And I told my pastor in one of the programs, in the African programs in South Africa, that I cannot change. Prayer didn't do it. Marriage didn't do it. I still feel the same way. I'm still the same person. And God loves me the way I am. And I think that's what you find. Yeah? Those are the reasons that people, yeah, give.
And within the Indian community, I mean, I don't want you to stereotype and generalize and essentialize about a particular racialized group in South Africa, but what are some of the trends that you've noticed in your own observations, Chithi?
You know, I'm going to be honest and start you at a very early point. I think I'm not going to classify myself or make myself unique to the situation, but it's very hard to get lesbians who will come out and speak out as I've spoken out in terms of my sexual orientation in South Africa. I think in the Indian community we have a lot of tradition and culture. So people will follow the norms of tradition and culture until the point where they cannot hold culture back anymore, or they would be forced into doing like something like an arranged marriage or things like that. For me, in terms of the Indian community, I feel that, you know, sometimes you get a sense that some parents do accept it, you know, and sometimes you get a sense that parents don't accept it. But I mean, it's like any parent would say that I want the best for my child, you know, but the best may not necessarily mean that I want what the child wants, you know. And I think with the homosexuality in Africa, in South Africa, in terms of Indians, it has been something that has been under the cover for a long time. You know, it's never been spoken about. People have been gay, yes. I have a history of a person who was married once to a gay man, and basically after being married to this gay man, realized that this man was gay and ended up divorcing this man and remarrying. And it was understandable then, but they would not understand. They feel that a person has to be born gay and not necessarily come out later in life. But they do not understand also that as much as you are not, you cannot come out early in life because of societal pressure, because of the pressure they put on you generally as a human being, you know, to get married, to have kids. That is a tradition that when you reach a certain age, you must be married. You must be having like, maybe if it doesn't, if they can help it, but then you need to have kids, you know. And that's the proof that you are a real Indian, you know, if you can follow the tradition, follow the culture. Anything diverse of that, like me, would be considered something that is a rebel in my culture, you know, because I just turned out to be totally opposite. I'm now dating a woman, and I'm living with this woman, and life goes on as if it's normal, and I do the normal things. And what automatically happens is rejection and social outcast. They just outcast you, and they ask questions, but they would never ask them to you, but they would leave them to you in indirect ways, and that's a sad part of it all.
Yeah, it seems to me that there's also an added dynamic to your particular orientation. Your partner is a black woman and you're an Indian woman.
Yes.
I'm wondering, you know, apartheid, people say apartheid is over and things have been completely dismantled in the mindset of people, but what sorts of challenges do you face being a lesbian Indian woman in South Africa dating a black lesbian woman in South Africa?
Sure. yes, I would agree with you very much that people have said apartheid is there, but there is apartheid in some social spheres in South Africa. Not everybody, I mean, we have the first point that we are lesbians, you know, that's the major concern. And then the second concern is that we are of a different cultural and religious background.
But for me and my partner at this point, we have decided to say that should you wish to do this, you do it, and should I wish to do this, I do it. If you wish to join me in what I want to do in my traditions and culture, you can do that. And if I wish to join you, I can do that. But I think it has caused a bit of a social uproar within even the lesbian and gay sector in South Africa, that a black woman and an Indian woman are dating, maybe a black and a white, but that is more common amongst the gays in South Africa, but not the lesbians, you know. And yeah, came Figile and came with an Indian woman, and Vineshi came with a black woman, and it was like, oh my God, what are you doing together, you know? And that also, you can see that the stereotypical behavior of the past is coming out. How can you be in love with a black woman? I mean, my mom has asked me that question, I think, over thousands of times, and said to me, how can you be in love with a black woman and things like that? So those are the, you know, stereotypical behaviors that you would find. But the sad part of it all is that, you know, love does not know any boundary. It does not know any color of skin. It does not know any specific form of gender. It does not know anything. Love is love. And if we can accept that two individuals are loving each other, beyond the fact that we have a different sexual orientation, beyond the fact that we are Indians, those things are basically, or Indian and black for that matter, those things are irrelevant. And being irrelevant as they are, love should see beyond that.
Thank you for listening to Pambazuka News Podcast, brought to you by Fahamu. You can find out more about Fahamu at www.fahamu.org.
The music was kindly provided by Freddy Macha. To hear more of Freddy's music, go to www.freddymacha.com. Maziwa Toki.